Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Vior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, September 29th, 2017. Secondary teachers in Juba wage a sit-down strike.
The teachers held a meeting. They have decided that let us just go for an open strike. The teachers go to school and sit. You can sit under the tree and you don't enter the class.
And there's strong evidence that South Sudanese children in Ugandan refugee settlements are not getting an education.
You get the ratio of a teacher is 1 to 150. There are few classes that are available nowadays school year. Those few classes are there, but they are also lacking desks for sitting.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Teachers in 10 government-owned secondary schools in Juba have gone on strike after not being paid their salaries for 6 months. Students could be seen idling under mango trees or roaming around the school, while others played games on school compounds around the capital. Dimo Silva Aurelia reports for VOA from Juba.
A teacher at the Juba Girls Secondary School who did not want to be identified for fear of reprisals from authorities says he and his colleagues have not reported to work this week after agreeing on Monday to stage a sit-down strike.
The teachers held a meeting. They have decided that let us just go for an open strike. Somebody can call it open and someone can call it silent. The teachers go to school and sit. You can sit under the tree and you don't enter the class.
Many teachers have been on a strike for several months now because they are demoralized due to the government's failure to pay them for months on end.
If you go to the house of any teacher here, they are suffering so much. But I appreciate teachers who taught up to this moment. They have just started this strike just recently, just last Monday, if I'm not mistaken. But all this time they are teaching, they have been teaching. You know, if you go to the, if you see the results of secondary certificate, you know, you find that the private schools are the one leading and the government schools are not.
Wani Michael teaches English at the Juba Commercial Secondary School. He's speaking in Arabic. He says he is one of many teachers who have not been paid in 6 months.
And we have our families to take care of. And you know very well that teaching is challenging because a teacher needs to have energy. They need to eat well so they can stand before the students to teach a lesson of 72 minutes talking, explaining, and giving assignments.
Many teachers say they cannot afford to pay transport fares after not being paid in several months. Wani says many end up walking long distances every day to get to and from their schools.
You leave your children at home hungry without food and later return home without anything, and yet they see you going for work every day but no money. Is this not creating problem in the family? That is why we have decided to go for a strike.
Edward Jada is a school administrator, commonly referred to as a school officer at the Juba Commercial Secondary School. He says he has tried without success to convince teachers to continue to teach.
Some of them, actually, they can come to the place of work, but sometimes they don't get to the class. That is how we don't threaten us even in the school. Of course, when teachers happen to come, you, the headmaster or the DVT or even the school officer, you cannot actually tell the teacher to go to the class. So, of course, it depends. If someone really is fitting the student to go and teach with these difficulties, can maybe enter to the class. But otherwise, someone cannot force any teacher to go to the class because he has right.
Students say the few teachers that still come to school enter class only to say hello and chat with each other. Rita Daniat, a student at the Juba Commercial Secondary School, called on Jubeki State education officials to improve teachers' working conditions.
Teachers is the key of everything because the Torahs, and there will be having knowledge to do other things. For them, actually, let it give our teachers their salary so our future will be bright.
Quebec State Education Ministry officials admit teachers have not been paid for several months, but called on teachers to be patient and continue teaching anyway. Reverend Daniel Swaka, Director General of the State Education Ministry, says the government does not have the money to pay teachers' salaries to the teachers.
We want to tell them that they can start going to the classes normally because there's something for them to sustain the families within the 2-3 days. If we have tolerated all this long period, can we be defeated with the 2-3 days? No, cannot.
Most secondary school teachers in South Sudan in government receive monthly salaries between 1,000 to 1,300 South Sudanese pounds. That is about $6 to $7. Swaka says a secondary school teacher who should get paid 1,300 South Sudanese pounds a month will be paid 2,600 South Sudanese pounds at once. Swaka says he believes secondary school teachers, the majority of South Sudanese teachers, were demoralized after hearing their primary school counterparts have been paid $40 from the European Union-funded Impact Project. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Many South Sudanese refugee children are struggling to get an education while in Ugandan refugee settlements. Most settlements lack the required school facilities. Children study under trees, in open spaces, under tents. But these are still inadequate to match the ever-increasing number of refugees. Reporter Catherine Nambi has more on the story from Kampala.
The majority of South Sudan refugees arriving in Uganda are school-aged children. According to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, about two-thirds of the refugees are under the age of 18. Most of them have high aspirations for their future once they complete their education. 11-year-old Abdusalam Dieng is a South Sudanese refugee in Ayilo, a settlement primary school in Adjumani district.
I want to be a president so that I change the lifestyle of South Sudan, so that there is no war. Two, I want to be a doctor so that I treat people. Our doctors were being killed in South Sudan because of nothing, and we ran here to be as a refugees.
However, the dreams of Dieng and other South Sudan refugee children in Uganda settlements are at risk due to lack of teachers as well as learning facilities and space. Bulgarang Gabriel is an education assistant in Nyumanzi refugee settlement in Adjumani district.
You get the ratio of a teacher is 1 to 150. There are few classes that are available nowadays school year. Those few classes are there, but they are also lacking desks for sitting, in which one desk is supposed to accommodate 3 children. And here you get the population, the enrollment of this school is about 1,583. That population, compared with the 9 classes that we have, you find that most children, they learn when they are urban at the window of the house, because the room cannot accommodate them.
The children who do get a primary education, however, do not make it to higher school levels. That is because there are few or no secondary schools in the camps. Inido Cheng is a senior protection officer with UN Refugee Agency.
We find a larger number of children passing their primary school but are unable to proceed to secondary school because of lack of resources. In this context, we have minimal number of secondary schools compared to the numbers that are currently attending primary school. And above all, there's also the provision of the need for scholarships to be able to sustain them. And again, scholastic materials are all required. And all this boils down to issues of resources. So overall, we are really urging the international community and donors, private funders, to come to our support, given the large numbers that we are receiving.
Education assistant Bulgarang says the absence of secondary schools is responsible for the crime in the settlements because many children are left idle.
They don't have anywhere to go and study in secondary school. So for them, whenever they are lacking school, they decide of what to do, whether bad or good, that's what they should just do at their free time. So it is a challenge to the community. All the cases that are solved in the settlement here are mainly because of secondary school students who are lacking space in secondary school. So we propose a secondary school, actually, if they can put secondary school up in the label of refugee settlement.
Stanley Misileni is the head of the UNHCR office in Adjumani. He says the South Sudan refugee children in Uganda camps need a complete education since they are the ones to remodel and redevelop South Sudan.
Not providing adequate education is a major concern because This is the generation for South Sudan, which if they do not earn skills at this time whilst in asylum, what will happen? Can you just imagine what would happen upon return and reintegration in the country of origin? So we do need education as one area to uplift the standards of the refugees.
Currently, children in many refugee settlements in northern Uganda rely on voluntary teachers to gain whatever education they can get. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, announced it has signed a cooperation agreement with Ethiopian Airlines a week ago to better facilitate the settlement of refugees, including thousands from South Sudan. IOM says Addis Ababa Bole International Airport has become one of the major gateways to Africa, and Ethiopian Airlines has taken on a major share of transporting refugees to resettlement camps in other countries. In a statement this week, IOM said Addis Ababa has facilitated the voluntary movement through the international airport of more than 6,000 refugees in 2016 and 3,200 refugees so far this year. IOM added the agreement will make it easier for refugees being resettled or migrants returning home through IOM's programs to identify where they can find assistance at the airport terminal. Help desks will be clearly marked with the IOM and Ethiopian Airlines signs. Milun Jovanovic, the operations unit head in IOM Special Liaison Office in Addis Ababa, said they often encounter refugees being resettled or family reunion or assisted voluntary return cases who do not speak English or the language of the transit country, so they can miss connecting flights. The United States takes the largest portion of resettlement cases with 3,000 refugees resettled in 2017 so far alone. Ethiopia is one of the host countries for large numbers of African refugees. It currently hosts more than 800,000 refugees, mainly from South Sudan, Somalia, and Eritrea. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A prayer for peace by church leaders in South Sudan. Find out where when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many times do you laugh in a day?
I don't even think about I'm going to laugh, because it's an emotional thing. When I'm happy, I laugh. When I'm sad, I laugh. I don't know.
I actually can't count the number of times I laugh, but I laugh a lot. And most of the times, it's maybe because of the experiences I've had, or maybe things that people do around me that make me laugh.
I can't estimate how many times I laugh a day, but previously I do laugh, regardless of being counting the time. But nowadays, I don't see any other thing that can make me laugh.
My laughters are very few. I used to laugh I cannot even count them, countless. But just by the situation my country is now, I cannot laugh that much.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese in the diaspora say they contributed towards the independence of South Sudan, but are disappointed at how their leaders are handling the affairs of the country. South Sudanese community leaders and activists in the United States say they expected to see change after South Sudan separated from Sudan. My colleague John Tanza holds a roundtable discussion with the diaspora on what should be done to put South Sudan back on track.
My name is Hakim Alfred Lado. I am a senior software engineer with the Toro Company. I've been living in Minnesota for 23 years. My starting remark would be really very simple to these important topics. The SPLM as a movement at that time, which turned out into a political party, failed the test to give us a representative government in an independent country that people of Southern Sudan voted for. That test, when they fail, resulted into the situations that we are in now. And if we are not very careful, we have reached to a level whereby we are now looking into ourselves as one ethnic group versus another ethnic group, And this is really, really very dangerous.
I'll take over from there. Let me move on to Galwak Touch. Galwak, could you introduce yourself briefly?
Thank you very much, John Tanza. Thank you for the opportunity, and to all the panelists. I appreciate your being here today. My name is Galwak Touch. I live here in Nashville, Tennessee. What I do for a living, I work for the organization that provide the resettlement services and also work with the refugees and immigrants here in America. I'm also an activist. What is happening in South Sudan today is not exactly what we all wanted to see. Where we are is not where we should be. And for us to be able to get back to what we all thought was South Sudan, that we were looking for it, that we advocate for it, we have to strategically look into how do we get it to where we are. What went wrong, and how can we revisit that? I think South Sudanese in general have to ask themselves honestly, what did we do wrong to ourselves? Are we honest for real? Is South Sudan belong to all of us? And if it is belong to all of us, how can we revisit that? I think if we were to be questioning ourselves as such, we have to look into what kind of peace do we want. I think South Sudan need peace, and that peace has to be peace that we have to have in our heart. The peace that was signed in 2015, had it been honestly implemented, it would have actually framed us to a direction that we can see as the roadmap moving forward to the real peace that we all want.
Thank you, Galwak. Let's move to Sarah. Sarah, introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you, John Tanza, and thanks to all on the panel. I'm glad to be on this panel. And I would just like to commend John Tanza for starting this conversation or this panel discussion, because this is what we are missing, talking to one another and just listening. Everyone speaks about peace, but we cannot agree on what kind of peace is it that we are looking for. And I agree with the last speaker, Galwak, that we have to define what is peace for us. And I would like to quote President Ronald Reagan, that peace is not absence of conflict. It is the ability to handle conflict by peaceful means. And conflict is there. It's everyday of life. So we need to find steps. What is it that we would like to do? First of all, figure out what the problem is. Why is the problem a big deal? What is it that we are talking about? Because there's so many things that is facing or that has is facing us as South Sudanese and led to this conflict. And we need to understand the root causes of this problem. Why do we care about it? And why do we want to find a solution to it? Peace, for me, it starts by myself. I should treat other people the way I wish to be treated, and not to see what we see going on in our communities, that one person stands with another because they are from their tribe, but they can treat another person badly, but they don't want to be treated that way. So I think we have to start by ourselves and treat others with the way we wish to be treated.
Sarah, thank you very much. Let me go to Jacob Atem. You've listened to your colleagues with their introductory remarks. Let me hear from you.
Yeah, thank you, John, and everyone in the panel today. My name is Jacob Atem. Currently, I'm a PhD student candidate, and I'm the president of Southern Sudan Healthcare Organization, in which we build a health clinic in Jonglei State. So my heart goes out to the victims and the people who are in the IDP camps in the neighboring countries. If you look at the internally displaced people, refugees in the surrounding neighbors' countries, how can we silence the gun to at least have these people return to their place? At least these IDP people who are the refugees could have a peace of mind. Why can we cannot learn? South Sudanese, can we not learn from peaceful means such as Kenya? Do we really have to kill the civilian, the vulnerable population such as women, children? Do our leaders have to push these refugees and IDPs into a place that is unsanitary, is this lack of water, this lack of problem that you are most likely or the people are prone to diarrheal diseases? So I just cannot imagine these vulnerable population going through what they have been going through from 2013 and up to now. So we ought to silence the gun.
Those are South Sudanese community leaders and activists discussing ways of ending the conflict in South Sudan. South Sudanese church leaders say they're concerned about abuses such as killings and rape that are rampant across South Sudan despite the signing of the peace agreement more than 2 years ago. Priests and bishops prayed for peace today in Juba. The Archbishop of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says church leaders prayed for the country's leaders to denounce violence and to work for peace. Waki Simon Mudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Church leaders expressed concerns about the economic crisis, noting essential commodities like fuel are being sold at exorbitant prices on the black market, making it inaccessible to most citizens. Priests and bishops say hate speech, rape, and other forms of violence continue unabated across the country, proving their leaders have failed to govern. They called on South Sudan's leaders to repent for their sins so that God can listen to the country's cries for peace. Archbishop Hilary Garang of Upper Nile Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says as long as there is tribalism, there will be suffering.
Our concern is that our people should reconsider and realize this and come back to unite themselves and rebuild our country. So we are displaced more than the rest now in Upper Nile. Our children have lost schools. Our young people have lost jobs. So we have nothing left. Many of us now are in displaced camps in Uganda, northern Uganda, and Kenya, and Sudan. So we have nothing in Upper Nile now.
While the church continues to preach reconciliation, peace, and love for one another, Archbishop Garang says many people still live in fear and suspect each other of wrongdoing. Matthew Taban Peter is the diocesan bishop of Onduruba. He says despite the leader's failure to restore peace, the church continues to advocate for reconciliation and stability.
We have to ask ourselves as a family, what has gone wrong? What have I done? What has he done? And now what is the way forward? That we are bridging against each other. This is the responsibility of the church to make people talk to themselves, reconcile to God. If I'm not being faithful to God, let us try to mend our relationship with God and also our brothers.
The prayer service was part of events marking last week's International Day of Peace. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Achieving gender equality and empowerment for all women and girls is a key element of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. At this month's meeting of the UN General Assembly, or UNGA, advocates are lobbying policymakers, diplomats, NGO leaders, and others about the great potential and special needs of the girls, especially those in the developing world. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Katya Iverson, President and CEO of Women Deliver, a leading advocate for the health, rights, and well-being of girls and women worldwide.
Girls and women have so much power and potential, and when you invest in them, there's a ripple effect and everybody wins. But their health, well-being, and rights have been under-prioritized in many countries across the globe.
So why is being here at UNGA something that will further their interests and therefore affect the world?
UNGA brings together world leaders from every country in the world. And if you want to talk to many at the same time, this is easy if you can navigate it. This year, Women Deliver has 15 young people from across the globe in town. And we work with them to have discussions with their leaders and really call attention to that young people are not just the leaders of tomorrow, they are leaders of today, and the world needs to invest in them.
Now, I understand you have this focus on adolescents. What do they need? What do they bring to the table?
Looking at young people and adolescents in terms of health, in terms of education, in terms of participation in the family, in communities, is very important. Imagine being a 15-year-old girl when so many things happen in your body, in your school, in your life. It's such an important age in terms of good habits and what they can, what they learn, what they want to be, their hopes, their dreams, their opportunities.
And their challenges.
And their challenges. Many places, they are married already when they are 15. They are already mothers. And the leading cause of death for girls between 15 and 19 years old is dying in pregnancy or childbirth.
Where?
Across the globe. But we see the highest rates of maternal mortality among adolescent girls in West Africa. And we also see girls not having any say in their family, any say in their own life, and being considered as a commodity. Women Deliver works to empower young people to live healthy lives and have, for example, access to health clinic where they can be treated properly and not put aside, not sit in a public room if they have to talk about something confidential, including their body and sexuality.
How do you negotiate the balance between the traditional cultural norms that they have and this other way of looking at women and girls that you promote? You seem to have a sense of urgency about a shift.
The best advocates for adolescent girls and adolescents in general are adolescents themselves and young people.
Why should they be given a voice?
Because it's their lives. Getting young people to the decision-making table, whether it's about policies or whether it's about programs or activities or investments, they need to be there because that will make the policies and programs much more efficient. We see great example of young people and adolescents organizing themselves to get a collective voice.
I understand that adolescent boys as well as girls are getting into the swing of this self-empowerment and making sure their voices are heard.
Sure. We see young men from the communities talk to the elders in the communities about how they don't want child marriage anymore, how they don't want their sisters to be married off, and how they don't want to marry somebody way young but want somebody equal. We see young people in Nigeria organize around being able to learn about their own bodies, getting sexuality education, and pushing that themselves so it now is getting into the curriculum of the schools that not only do you need to hear about biology, but you also need the other aspect. We need to look at girls and women not as victims and vulnerable, but as powerful and really key agents in driving the progress in communities, in countries, and globally.
That was Katya Iverson, President and CEO of Women Deliver. She spoke to VOA's Adam Phillips at the United Nations in New York. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song No More War by Ross Corby.
We're just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution. And must be a conclusion. Sure. Rastafari, to stop the war. No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today. They're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide. Not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world with that love? So how can you say you're leading the world without peace?
We've been listening to Ross Corby with the song No More War. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We'd like your feedback on the show. Drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Have a peaceful weekend and join us on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
The rain will fall. Can you tell me what the mystical vibration you see in your heart? No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah.